The time to tell your partner you didn't like something is not necessarily after you had just engaged in sex and you're both sitting there tired and vulnerable, you know? So definitely, hey, let's have a conversation. We need to talk about our intimacy. Let's set a time and place to do that so we can both be present. We both know what we're talking about. We can respond rather than react. And we can really figure this out together.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. All right, Carly, I am so excited to have you join me on the podcast today. Carly is a student of a doctorate program in clinical sexology, and we are going to talk all about kind of the work that she does. And of course, you know, on the podcast, we always talk about sex. So I want to just start opening with, what are some common misconceptions and myths that you see about sex in the work that you do?
Yes. One of the biggest misconceptions is that sex is going to fix everything. So that if you are having a problem, that you should be having sex more, that, you know, leaning on sex and the sexual intimacy factor of a relationship, when in reality, a lot of the times when couples are having difficulty with intimacy or with sex or whatever it may be, conflict, communication, I might tell them to even take sex off the table. That seems to be really surprising for people because, like I said, it's that misconception that we should be grabbing more onto sex and having more sex to try to increase this intimacy. But in fact, that doesn't always do it for people.
I love that you brought that up. And it's funny that you brought up taking sex off the table because I actually was kind of scrolling through your Instagram today to get some ideas of what I wanted to talk about. And I had seen your post about that. And it can do so much when you take the pressure off of having sex, when you are experiencing issues or whatever's coming up in the bedroom, like taking it totally out of the picture decreases the pressure, decreases the stress, and can make such a difference on the actual quality of the intimacy that you are having.
Oh, totally, totally. When I tell people, Dr. Barry McCarthy talks about these five dimensions of touch, and each one gets even more intimate, even deeper. And the first one, you know, has to do with just like grazing, things like that, all the way down to the fifth one, which has to do more with sexual intimacy. And so when I tell people, like, determine where you're going to go and don't go past that, they're like, oh, all of a sudden hand holding feels so gratifying and satisfying. All of a sudden cuddling just feels so different because you're really able to be present. You're not worrying or wondering or having this pressure of what's going to happen next. Like, oh, it has to end in sex. It doesn't. And, you know, that kind of leads me down the path of my thought process of like that pressure of having to have an orgasm too, right? If you take the pressure of this destination or the pressure of the destination, yeah, off the table, right? Sex, you're able to really enjoy that journey, and that journey can be so, so beautiful.
Yeah. I love that you brought up the five dimensions of touch. I think that that is a very useful tool. And I have found something very interesting in like my dating world. I have put a lot of pressure on sex, and I have found that the more dating I do, the more the men actually just want to like get to know me and not have sex all of the time, which is a very interesting new concept for me. And learning to like kind of appreciate the other types of intimacy rather than going for penetration always.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And being able to get that emotional connection and learn more about the other person. Sometimes when you have that deep emotional connection, and not everyone needs this to feel pleasure, but it can make the experience even more pleasurable when you have that built-in intimacy from other aspects, not just sexual intimacy. And I mean, you talked about myths and misconceptions, that myth that intimacy is just sex. It's a myth.
Yes, yes. So how do you define sex?
So I think sex is very unique to each individual. So in my practice, I definitely have a conversation about like, what does this mean to you? For me, it does have to do with more of a sexual intimacy component. So it doesn't have to be penetrative. It doesn't have to be intercourse. It doesn't have to be what society would deem sex to be as like a man and a woman or anything like that. It's two partners really engaging in sexual satisfaction and gratification together and pleasure. That's the end goal, the ultimate like healthy sex. And it doesn't have to end in orgasm. It doesn't have to end in something that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves for. So I think that's my long-winded answer of what it is, but it really is just two individuals or multiple individuals, people, really. It doesn't even have to just be two. I realize as I'm saying that out loud, but people engaging in a healthy, consensual, gratifying, and satisfactory, pleasurable experience together, however that looks.
Yeah, I think the definition is so unique to everybody. And there isn't this universal definition like we're taught growing up. You know, we're taught growing up that it's P and the V, it's only penis and the vagina. And it's not. Like, you can have, I'm working on a book, ironically, and the first chapter of my book, it's about all of my experiences and the lessons that I've learned. But the first chapter is about actually having sexual experiences with women before I even knew what I was doing. And before I even knew that it was like sexual experiences with women. And so it was a very eye-opening experience for me when I started writing that, because I'm like, oh shit, I've always defined this as penetration. But really, like, sex is so much more.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is. And you're right. It's because it's what we're taught. We live in a heteronormative society where even, I mean, our media is starting to become more inclusive. I think we're starting to see sex not only be represented as a cisgender man and a cisgender woman, you know, engaging in P and V, right? Like you're talking about intercourse, but that's what we grew up seeing. So it takes a lot. And that's why I said it's such a unique definition, because it comes down to what were you taught? Where are you learning your information from? What are your personal experiences that have shaped your definition of sex? And so I like to empower everyone when they're having these conversations to have like a definition talk. Like, what does this mean if I was to engage in sex with you, right? If we were to engage in intimacy, what does that mean? Because it's so unique for each person.
Mm, I love that. Which I love that you brought up communication and having conversations about this. Literally every single podcast ties back to communication in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know that I've really done a podcast solely on communication, but I think that a lot of us are not taught the skills to communicate effectively. And then you add in a little bit of sexual tension in whatever way, shape, or form that it presents itself. It really makes it hard to communicate about things in the bedroom. And I would love for you to share with us, like, what is your approach to helping couples improve their sexual communication?
Oh, yeah. No, you hit the nail on the head. We're not taught anything. I always joke, well, I think it's a joke with my couples that we're taught to become this monogamous, right? You're supposed to get married and have a family and live this certain lifestyle, but no one teaches you how to have a relationship. They're just kind of like, this is what you're supposed to do and figure it out. Figure out all the stuff. You're going to have conflict. You have to cohabitate and all this stuff. And how? So I love that you had said that. And then, right, you add in the awkwardness and the discomfort that comes in with potentially talking about sex and maybe having to tell your partner, like, hey, I didn't like when you did that. That can be uncomfortable. How do you do that? So what I recommend for my couples and for people is taking a step back and really thinking about your own wants and needs first. If you can't think about what you want or know what you want, it makes it really hard to communicate. You end up going in circles. You end up maybe feeling defensive. Maybe there could be, I like to give the caveat when it comes to communication, like reacting versus responding. So maybe there's that tension for for reaction rather than responding. But when you come and you're like, okay, I know what I want. I know what I need. I know what's pleasurable for me. You're able to communicate that with your partner. Now let's take a step back and say like, hey, I don't know what I like. You can also communicate that. And that could be a fun exploratory exercise for you and your partner. But that comes with being able to say, when you touch me there, I like that. Or I don't enjoy when, you know, you put your mouth there. So it's really exploring your own wants and needs, whether that be alone or with a partner. I also say time and place. That's a big one. I had a couple that I can think of that one of the things I said to them that really resonated was, don't talk about sex after having sex. The time to tell your partner you didn't like something is not necessarily after you had just engaged in sex and you're both sitting there tired and vulnerable, you know? So definitely, hey, let's have a conversation. We need to talk about our intimacy. Let's set a time and place to do that so we can both be present. We both know what we're talking about. We can respond rather than react. And we can really figure this out together. And then there's no shame in support. Like if you're having issues communicating and you need those skills, see a coach, see a therapist, reach out to a friend that you know has tackled this in their own relationship. Like it's okay to ask, how do I do this? How do I tell my partner what I want and need? How do we talk about sex?
Yes, I love that you pointed that out, that there's no shame in asking for help. I think that a lot of people, and myself included, you know, you're not taught these things. You want to be better at them, but like you don't know where to start. And when you seek help, whatever that looks like, I personally love mentorship and coaching, obviously. I mean, we're both in the space of coaching, but books are a great way to start exploring. I love the accountability of the coaching aspects of the mentorship, but books are a really, really great place to start. I actually just read a book not too long ago. I am totally blanking on the name, but it was all about communicating. And one of the things that they talked about was if you're not actually speaking to the root of the problem, it's not going to be addressed. So going back to if you don't know what you want and need, you're not actually going to be able to address the true problem if you don't know what it is. And learning to explore with your partner, try things. If you are in partnership, it's something you can do together. It's also something you can do alone, in or not in partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And like, how hot is that to be like, hey, we are going to set this time every Saturday between 9 and 12 and it's explore. Like, we just explore each other.
Yes. Yeah, that, you know, you're just talking about misconception that sex always has to be spontaneous and not scheduled. And I actually just went to a baby shower this past weekend and they had advice cards. And one of them was like, say goodbye. And I wrote, say goodbye to unscheduled sexy time. Like you have to adapt your life. And with, you know, so if you need that time to set where you know you can be in the headspace to explore, because it's 7:50 p.m. on a Monday and I had clients all day. I'm exhausted. The last thing I want to do right now, I'll be honest, is go to the bedroom with my partner and explore new things. But if we scheduled that, I'd be able to show up with an open mind and know like, I'm going to leave all life stressors at the door. This is our time. You know, it is sexy to schedule sex. It is.
Yes,
do it.
And it builds the anticipation. Like there is like so many components of scheduled sex that is actually like really fucking sexy that people don't necessarily consider until they try it and explore what potential pleasure they can receive by having scheduled sex.
Yeah, absolutely. So that I think is really important. And you mentioned books. There are a lot of different books out there about communication, about understanding your own desire, because we talked about getting to that like root problem. So understanding that, a lot of conversations beyond just understanding your wants and needs is also like a desire discrepancy. So libido, my partner wants to have sex all the time and I don't. How do we talk about this? So a lot of books that are out there, you know, Come As You Are is one that's at the top of my mind right now. I mean, I've a ton of them on my bookshelf. Okay, one's not sticking out, but Come As You Are is a really good one. Helps you understand your libido and your desire so that you know it's not and nothing's wrong with you. It's not shameful to not want to have sex as much as your partner, but then you can have that conversation. Now, if you had that conversation, you didn't fully understand what was going on, maybe you'd feel a little bad about yourself, or it could create an argument. So really understanding more about yourself and what is going on and what do we need to communicate about.
Yeah. The one thing that kind of came to mind when we're talking about scheduled sex is it doesn't have to be sex. Like, it's scheduled intimacy, it's scheduled communication, it's scheduled exploration. Yeah, it might result in sex for you, but it may absolutely not. And that isn't necessarily the end goal with that scheduled time for connection with your partner. And I think so many people get fixated on, oh, it's scheduled sex. Actually, it may not even end in sex. Like, it's just time to be with your person.
Yeah, I love how you said that, scheduled intimacy. And we were talking about like how sexy it is to kind of have an end stop too. Like, what if you labeled that intimacy? So today we're going to have scheduled emotional intimacy, and we're going to sit down and, I don't know, bring out Esther Perel's card game or something and really get to know each other. Then, you know, we're going to have some, I don't know, spiritual intimacy and pull some tarot cards together, right? Like, it doesn't have to be communication. Those weekly meetings, 10 minutes, 15 minutes every Sunday while you're drinking your coffee, you're going to just talk about your schedule and have a communication exercise to do, right? It doesn't have to look like sex, but all those things increase the opportunity to have higher sexual intimacy with your partner. So you're building all of that. As you're building this intimacy, you might notice like, hey, I feel even more connected to you in the bedroom because we spent the last 2 weeks building intimacy elsewhere.
Which actually makes me want to talk a little bit about like saposexuals and like some of those other categories where some people need intellectual intimacy. Some people need emotional intimacy to even have the desire for sex, and that they can't just go have sex and be satisfied. What are some of those, I guess, labels? Can you tell us a little bit about some of those?
Yeah. So there are people, right? I actually was just working on my dissertation yesterday with all terminology. And one of them, it was demisexual. And that is someone that identifies and feels sexually attracted or romantically attracted to someone when there is a deep emotional connection. So they would need that building of emotional intimacy in order to feel connected to someone. And then you have people, right, that aren't even, they don't have sexual attraction. So they identify as asexual. They might have romantic connection, intellectual connection, spiritual connection. They build intimacy in other ways outside of just sexual, and they are capable of having healthy, great relationships. They just don't have that sexual attraction, that sexual drive. And then similarly, aromantic, right? We're talking about feeling connected in different levels of intimacy. People who identify as aromantic don't have necessarily that romantic intimacy, right? So they might find that that intellectual intimacy is what pulls them in, or maybe the sexual intimacy is really what helps them and their partner stay in this healthy relationship moving forward. And I think I'm a strong believer that as we continue to evolve and have conversations like this, there's just going to be more and more people being like, hey, I identify as this. Hey, there's not a label already out there for this, but this is what gets me going or turns me off. And I feel seen and heard now, even amongst these labels. If one of these doesn't resonate, but you're like, hey, I don't know, I don't think I fit in these typical categories or labels that are out there, you just wait. Something's going to come out.
And what I want to say is like, you can create your own, but like you can create your own identification. Like you don't need a term that's already out there. You can identify with whatever feels right for you. So if you need intelligent communication in order to, or like have that like intellectual connection in order to feel a sexual attraction, there are words for that currently, but like you could also just say, hey, I need an intellectual connection.
Yeah. And that's a fun thing about, we were talking about wants and needs and knowing that for yourself. That's a fun part of it too, is not just learning about what you like and don't like in the bedroom or sexually specifically, like where you like to be touched. or where like I said, you like someone's mouth or don't like their mouth. It's further exploring intellect. We talked about romance. We talked about that deep emotional connection, right? So learning, those are also wants and needs for yourself in a relationship, in a partner, even in a sexual connection, intimate setting. Yeah, totally. You do not need that label at all. I completely agree with you. So own it. Learn more about yourself. Learn more about what really gets you going and attracts you to someone or what doesn't. And it's great. It makes you who you are. It makes you wonderful and special.
Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal. Now, an affirmation that always comes up for me is, what makes me great is my uniqueness. And that's what just came to mind, was embracing our uniqueness, and that we all are so different. We all have different needs, desires. And that is what attracts other people to each and every one of us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sexually and non-sexually.
Yes. Yeah. It is not a one size fits all, right? You might find a few people that have similarities, or a whole group of people that have similarities in what you like and don't like. And I totally love when people connect with community, because I think, especially when you like things and you're open about talking about sexual things, sometimes that can be isolating or you feel alone. So finding those communities for yourself of people that like similar things as you, it can be really, really helpful. And knowing that it is not a one size fits all, and that it's all about respecting each other. If this isn't what you like, that's fine. Don't yuck my yum.
Yes. In so many different ways. And I feel like, I love that you brought up find people who like doing things that you like to do. Because as somebody who travels a lot, who makes a lot of friends and connections, that's something that, like, I do this outside of the bedroom. This is how I develop platonic relationships as well, is just doing things that I like, that put me in environments where they're probably going to be similar individuals that I might connect with.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you can do that both, like you said, in that sexual and not sexual context. We're talking about, you know, the need to build intimacy in a lot of different aspects of our life. And you can even build intimacy with friends. It doesn't mean you have to go have sex with those friends unless you want to.
Yeah. And I love that you brought that up, because I think that we kind of skim over that all the time. And there are a lot of things that I see on social media about the impact, especially for women. I mean, women are a little bit better than men at doing this, but how friendships increase the longevity of our life and it add value to our life. And I know that women are a little bit better at having high, I don't want to say high value relationships, but high quality relationships, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we saw the effects of what friendship and, like, that social component did during the pandemic, right? We were all isolated. Now, if the only way that you were ever interacting with people were, I don't know, let's say your coworkers, and you didn't have many friends, and then you got let go, you were isolated. So that value and that we saw the value behind social interaction and friendship and being able to have that support there for you. And yeah, I don't know the statistics behind it, but I definitely could see what you're saying where women tend to value that friendship, that high quality friendship. And I think that comes down to the gender norms of, you know, where women can be more emotional and vulnerable and build that deep emotional intimacy or connection, quote unquote, faster because, you know, our society teaches men that that's not how they connect with each other. They connect over certain things. And again, this is a societal norm, so this isn't for everyone, but that's why I think that tends to be that way. Because I think the first time we met, we were sitting here and talking about sex. I mean, I know that's our career, but that's a vulnerable topic. I think we'd be talking about that even if it wasn't our career and we met at this point. So the fact that we were able to do that in the first 20 minutes of meeting, I think shows kind of the difference that there is in being vulnerable in friendships.
Yes. And I see that even like when in my women's groups that I have and some of the other like things that I do, in that women can come and a lot of times be themselves. I don't want to say easily, because it's not easy by any means, but faster than I perceive men, in that like women come and they're able to connect. They're able to share a lot of times by the end of the call. And I don't work with men, so I'm not really sure exactly how that is, but they do tend to generally be a little bit more easy to connect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with coaching clients specifically, with the couples, sometimes you will often see that the woman does a lot of the talking when it comes to talking about the vulnerable things. So why they're coming to coaching. Ali, my business partner, and I work together with all of our clients, and we try to pull the other person into the conversation. But you can see that the vulnerable conversation is far more comfortable for the woman, which goes back into what we were saying about communication. You know, when you schedule that time to talk about sex, when you schedule that time to talk about your problems, you're allowing that person to come to the conversation prepared to be vulnerable. That's not something they're used to doing. They're not going to do it at 7:50 on a Monday when they just got home from work.
Yeah. I also think this is why more women are happy single, and that they have so many developed platonic relationships that they're not necessarily looking for some of these intimacy needs to be met in partnership, because they're already being fulfilled within their same-sex relationships or their girlfriends.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it comes down to the individual like values and what you need out of a relationship, and a lot of what you can get in a romantic partner is, you know, a life partner is a friend. You could, and there's plenty of people that you hear like, I fell in love with my best friend, or we built a friendship first, or like you said, I feel totally satisfied being single right now because I have this great, wonderful friendship, multiple friendships that are fulfilling me in all the ways that a partner might right now. And it's a really beautiful thing. It is. And, you know, even having communication with your friends can be difficult. So it also allows you to further, I think, and this kind of is going a little off track, but part of the reason I consider myself a sex and relationship therapist and not like a couples counselor as much, even though like insurance would say it's couples counseling, is because it's relationships. It's not just for couples. It's not just for partners. You can have conflict in any relationship, any aspect of a relationship in any capacity. And that's where I come in, is understanding the way relationships play and the way we have to communicate and learn how to, you know, adapt to other people and the way that our past shape. I mean, it's so complicated, but that goes into that, is I have people that come in and we talk about friends and friendship conflicts. And I'm like, these are relationships. You can conflict resolution this situation the same way you would if this was your partner and a romantic partner.
And that's such a great way to practice having those conversations outside of partnership. And potentially less threatening environment when it is a girlfriend, because you have maybe a little bit more intimacy, longevity in the relationship. And so, especially for me, like I use a lot of my friendships, or I don't want to say use, but like I practice within a lot of my friendships so that when I do end up in relationship and partnership, these skills aren't like totally never been used or explored or experimented with in my lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we said, you know, they don't teach us. No one teaches us these things. It's modeled off behavior that we see on media and past experiences. And so utilizing that and even taking a step back and saying like, hey, last time I resolved this conflict with my friend, how could I use this same type of exercise or skill or I statements, right? Whatever it may be with a partner. So you're like practicing without even acknowledging or recognizing that you're practicing. And to be honest, you've been doing it for a really long time, because relationships are really any interaction that you had. Maybe, you know, you had to have a really awkward conversation with a teacher in middle school about a grade, right? You didn't understand why you got a grade and you had to have a really uncomfortable conversation. I mean, does the context of that translate to a partner? No, but that practice of having an uncomfortable conversation with someone that maybe might be a little intimidating does.
Absolutely. So I wanted to circle back a little bit more to sexual desires and specifically discrepancies. You had kind of brought that up a little bit ago. I find that that is one of the most common things that couples struggle with.
Yes.
How do you help couples who are experiencing desire discrepancy?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's that first step that I had talked about, having that understanding for yourself that the desire discrepancy is not wrong. And there is no shame and there should be no guilt, no blaming your partner, nothing like that. It's just inherently built in us and is so dependent on almost everything around us. Did you get enough sleep? Was work stressful? Did you eat the right foods? Did you have too much salt the day before and you're feeling like puffy because the water is being retained, right? Anything can affect your libido. So I think really understanding that from the individual level has to happen first, because otherwise you end up, I think, putting shame either on yourself or on your partner without even meaning to. So taking that step back. Then from there, it's really having conversations and figuring out, right, when the person who has that lower desire, when do you feel like you are in the mood? Like, what do you need to feel this? You know, creating that, playing into your partner's wants and needs. And then the person with the higher libido, what can we do here? You know, so that we're all feeling satisfied. We're all feeling like no one's feeling like I have to have sex because you want to, even though I don't. Or someone feels like, oh, we're not having enough sex because you don't want to have sex. So where is that middle ground? Where can you find that pleasure? Again, taking sex off the table even, right? Maybe your partner would be cool with like doing some hand stuff and getting satisfied that way. And like, you don't have to necessarily be in the mood yourself to have sex and be turned on to want to give to your partner. So it's really sitting down and like going and really figuring out the individual parts. You know, we're talking about everyone being unique. Every partnership is also unique. So yeah, that's my long-winded answer.
I think that's so important, though, is that like going back to it doesn't have to be penetration, in that like if one partner has higher desire, maybe they masturbate more. Maybe there's mutual masturbation. Maybe you enjoy bringing pleasure to your partner who has the higher sex drive. I hate using the word drive. I use air quotes over here. But the partner that has the higher desire, you're trying to incorporate like different ways to have this experience. And I don't think that like it has to be together a lot of the time either. Like, I mean, I am team vibrator for sure. And I think that, you know, it's important that we utilize all of those other things. So it doesn't have to always look the way that society makes it look to us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that goes back into like relieving some shame towards, you know, masturbation. There is no shame in masturbating if you are in a partnership. If, you know, you need that release, if that's what you need to sleep, if that's your stress relief. I mean, there's so many different reasons to masturbate. It's really, really healthy for you. Wink, wink, everyone should be doing it. But relieving some of that shame that maybe even I've talked to individuals where maybe they don't feel comfortable about their partner masturbating or something like that. Being able to talk through things like that as well with your partner in these check-ins, in these vulnerable conversations, like, okay, this is what makes me uncomfortable. How can we move through this together, right? What about this situation? What about masturbating makes me uncomfortable? And really diving into that. You know, it's really about just releasing all the shame that you can put on each other for not having the same libido, for not having the same wants and how often you want to have sex.
Do you feel like you can have satisfying relationships even if your sexual desires are not the same?
100%. Yes, I think that is so such a, again, back to the myths and misconceptions, you know, it's a myth that partners that have different wants sexually or different libidos are not compatible, right? I mean, we just talked about multiple different ways that you can overcome having different libidos, including touching yourself, eliminating it from sex. One of the other things that came to mind, we talked in the book Come As You Are. So Emily Nagoski talks about accelerators and brakes. So understanding the things that turn you on and don't turn you on, right? That could be really helpful too in understanding your partner's libido. If there's someone with a higher libido, they might have far more accelerators than they do brakes. If you're someone with a lower libido, you might have a lot of things that are like, oh, nope, not for me. This turns me off and is a switch, right? Right away, I'm done. So focusing on your partner's accelerators, the things that do turn them on, the things that do get them in the mood. Understanding, like, is your libido something that needs to be spontaneous or is it something that has to respond to something, right? It's all about really understanding yourself and your partner. And you can make it work. You totally can make it work. So, you know, if that's something that you and your partner are experiencing, go see, right? No shame in seeing support. Go see a coach that can help you figure out how to have this conversation, how to navigate differences. That's what you're talking about. You're talking about sexual differences. I guarantee you have differences in other areas of your life as well. And you were able to figure that out. You can do the same thing.
And I think that I love that you brought it up, the like, it appears in other areas outside of sexuality as well, because think about doing the dishes. We compromise, right? Like you may hate to do the dishes, but the other partner loves to do the dishes. So it's the same in the bedroom. Like your partner also wants you to be satisfied, whatever way that looks. So whether that looks like more sex for you or less sex for you, they want that satisfaction for you. And they want to, okay, so if you have a higher sex drive, how can I help you? If you have the lower desire, okay, and you're the person with the higher desire, how can I help you get there? Do you need the house clean when you come home from work? And do you need a bath drawn? And do you need dinner served? Like, if you need that, like, damn straight, I'm probably going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I know you like it.
Absolutely. It all comes down to the whole topic of this podcast, communication. Being able to sit down and really communicate what you need and not making assumptions, right? If your partner has a lower libido, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not attracted to you or don't want to be with you anymore. And then you end up going down that rabbit hole. I'm so guilty of it, of those ruminating thoughts of, oh no, my partner doesn't want to touch me anymore. They don't like me. They don't love me. They don't want to be with me. It could just be that they're not in the mood. And so really communicate, sit down, have those conversations and be vulnerable with each other and lean into it. I promise it's worth it. It really is. It's uncomfortable at first, but it is worth it.
And these conversations build the connection. They build the intimacy and will help long term.
Yeah. Absolutely. It will allow it to become part of a pattern almost like a ritual or routine for you and your partner. We talked about doing this not even just with sex, but doing it like with weekly meetings and chores and activities and conflicts and things like that. If you do the same thing with sex, it's going to become part of your routine or your ritual for you and your partner to have more open conversations. You know, you might even find that randomly on a Saturday afternoon, you're like, hey, did you like what I did last Thursday? Right? And it just is so normal, where before it was a very timid conversation where you felt very awkward and vulnerable. The more you lean into discomfort, the more comfortable it becomes. And the reason that we are uncomfortable is because it's unfamiliar. So the more you do it, the more familiar it becomes.
Practice. Yes. I love it. Oh, Carly, this is so good. I'm so glad I could sit down with you and chat about all of this. If the listeners take one thing away from today's conversation, what would you want it to be?
I think that communication makes the world go round. Communication is really the key to everything, even self-communication, right? So sometimes we need to talk to ourselves out loud. Self-reflection is self-communication, you know? So we're talking about this podcast specifically had to do with sex and partner communication. So take those skills that you have, take the practice that you're using with your friends, that uncomfortable conversation that you had with your parent, right? What did I do when I felt uncomfortable? Did I prepare for it? And take it into your sex life too, as well as take sex off the table. I'm a big fan of that advice as well. Communicate and feel free to say, we're not having sex tonight. We're going to do some other stuff. And no, that's okay.
Yes, yes. You gave me just a brilliant idea talking there about how I haven't done a podcast about connection to self in like talking to yourself. And yeah. I mean, I know you follow my Instagram, but that's something that I work with so many women on. And I need to do a podcast about that. Maybe there will be a solo cast coming.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. People don't think about it that way. You really are talking to yourself when you're doing self-reflection. I think when we think of talking to ourselves, we really think of people walking around the house, like talking out loud or like listening to the voice in their head. But it's not. It's all about self-connection and self-communication. You're getting in touch with yourself and growing, learning, bettering yourself. All what it is. And that's what you're doing when you're communicating with other people. You're growing and learning and bettering your relationship, whether it's a hard conversation or an easy conversation. In some capacity, that relationship changes.
Yeah. And it's all awareness and just it's data, it's information.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Where can the listeners find you at?
Yes. So you can find me at Comfy with Carly on Instagram. That would be the best way from there. I do have a link that connects you with my podcast. Full disclosure, there's only one season out. I am in lull right now. It's been, I think, like a 6+ month hiatus, but I'll be back once I'm done with school and can check something off my to-do list. I'm finding some gray hairs. So that was my time to, that was my point to pull back on some stuff. But yes, on Instagram, feel free to message me if you ever have any questions, if you're interested in coaching, being connected with a sex therapist. I'm always here and happy to point you to the right resources and listen to you.
I didn't know that you had a podcast. What is the title of your podcast?
Comfy with Carly.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I'm going to have to go check it out. Well,
yeah, I think there's like 6, 7, 8 episodes. They came out before last summer. It was fun. But as you know, it's a lot of work to do a podcast. Oh. So I will be back, but stand by for that.
Yes, I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your knowledge. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was so wonderful to talk to you.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Dinell, go to coaching.jordandinell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again and see you next episode.